Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of LoRaWAN is Kevin Cantrell, founder and CEO of CropWatch, a pioneering IoT company based in Miyazaki, Japan. Originally from Boston, Kevin transitioned from fintech software development into the dynamic world of LoRaWAN, driven by a fascination with the technology's unique capability to deliver data over challenging terrains and remote areas. Under Kevin's leadership, CropWatch addresses critical challenges in agriculture, cold chain logistics, and infrastructure monitoring, leveraging LoRaWAN's strengths to bridge connectivity gaps in Japan's mountainous landscapes. He and his team have developed robust IoT solutions, from monitoring temperatures in industrial refrigeration units to innovative wildfire detection systems that mitigate agricultural threats from wild boars and bears. Yeah, boars and bears. His innovative work also extends to disaster monitoring, tackling unique local challenges like earthquakes and typhoons. In addition to running CropWatch, Kevin serves as digital transformation advisor for Saito City, aiding the city in harnessing IoT for public safety and civic improvement. In our conversation today, we explore his journey from coding financial forms in Boston to revolutionizing rural connectivity and safety in Japan, discuss his entrepreneurial insights on building ruggedized IoT solutions, and get his perspective on the future of LoRaWAN-based monitoring systems. Let's dig in. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm psyched to have you here. So you're in Miyazaki, Japan, in Saito City. I think originally you were in Boston before this. And we were just talking, you're telling me that you were not fluent in Japanese. I was assuming anyone who moved to Japan would be. Walk me through why you started an IoT venture in rural Japan.
Yeah, sure. So basically it started when I was in Boston and things were going great, but I sort of wanted to do more with what I knew. I sort of got to the point where I was feeling like I was just creating these forms for banking purposes, like over and over. But then I started looking into what I could do with microprocessors, and I learned about LoRaWAN for the first time, and I'm like, this is really cool. Like the ability to send, like I looked into longer distance Wi-Fi sending, but sure, it's not that great. But the ability to send data extreme distances was just too exciting. And I figured I'd start to build LoRaWAN devices and use them.
Yeah. And place them around. Okay, so there's a bunch of challenges to agriculture in Japan, and some of those challenges face farmers all over the world. Is there anything specific to Japan, to where you are, where you're like, oh, LoRaWAN really helps solve this problem?
So specifically where, like in Japan, it's a very mountainous area. So you've got a lot of places where you have no connection to the outside world. These mountains, extremely tall with these very deep valleys. So getting any sort of LTE cell phone connection, just
not going to happen.
Not going to happen. And you're kind of further outside of a city or a more metropolitan place. And it's just not worth putting up like a cell phone tower for, you know, in this area. So that's sort of where LoRaWAN comes in. It really bridges the gap between where one network ends, and it allows you to sort of create your network.
Yeah, I always think of it as like rebubbling coverage, which is a funny way of thinking. Like, so you've got a cell tower and you can connect to that, and then you can create a new bubble of coverage that's a LoRaWAN, you know, it's LoRaWAN coverage that's not LTE, but it allows you to do a bunch of stuff, especially if you're doing work on backhaul or cell backhaul.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, walk me through like what the Japanese LoRaWAN system is like. Here we are in the US. I know there's a huge presence in Europe. I just came back from Barcelona. It's like Europe, the US, super into it. I didn't see much. I may not have seen anything from Japan. One company, Murata. But what's it like living there and doing LoRaWAN?
So LoRaWAN, I'd say, is still smaller in Japan, but it does seem to be growing. A lot of the networks here are private, less than in like Europe. Like if you go onto TTN Mapper, and you look at Europe, it's just, you can't see Europe. It's just all gateways. While Japan, there are some, and it is growing, like the number of new gateways since last year, it's sort of night and day. But still, I feel like a lot of people haven't heard about it. There's a need for it. And when I start to tell people about it, they're like, this is amazing. This is exactly what, you know, what we've been wanting, but we just haven't heard about it. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity. It's just getting people to learn and hear about it. That's kind of the trick.
Are there kind of entry points that you'll use when you're talking to someone about, hey, this is what LoRaWAN can do, where it always works, whether it's like energy metering or soil moisture sensing or something like that? Are there specific sensors or applications where you're like, this is almost always a home run?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think LoRaWAN here is probably pretty similar to other places. Cold chain.
Okay.
Cold chain is really good because a lot of the people we've talked with have tried like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi sensors, and inside of like these large industrial refrigeration units, it's just
it's not going to work.
Exactly. And we've seen some like kind of crazy things that people have tried to do to get the connection via Wi-Fi. Like there was this one point where people had like a Wi-Fi router like inside of this box that was outside with this like Ethernet cable and power cable running it, not optimal, but LoRaWAN just gets that signal easy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that every Starbucks in America has a LoRaWAN gateway, because it's like, oh, it makes their cold chain monitoring super easy.
Right.
Pretty cool. Okay. So kind of skipping over the whole or packaging up the whole story is that you're a nerd from Boston. You've been writing stuff for like the fintech stuff, like writing all these bank forms, figuring out software.
Exactly. Yeah. I've worked at just a bunch of banks.
And then you come to Japan, you're like, oh, this IoT thing is pretty cool. I can help out and I've got these skills and I can figure out the rest on the LoRaWAN side. And then at some point, Saito City says to you like, hey, and I don't know if they came to you, I'd actually like to know how you got this slot. They're like, hey, we'd like you to help run DX, digital transformation, for us in some way. And whatever that position is, like, walk me through how that happened. Did you just... you met someone in a coffee shop and they're like, oh, cool, you're a nerd, you could help us out? Or was it more like you went looking like, how can I help my local city out? How did that go down?
So basically, when I first started out here in Saito, one of the things that actually helped just a ton was the city offered support for small businesses, grants, things like that. And we were talking with them. My wife was working on that portion of it. It's me and my wife doing this, and she does most of like the more business side of things while I'm doing more of the electronics, coding, tech stuff.
The nerd stuff. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. stuff I find fun. But as she was talking with the city, they're like, we can see that this is super useful and we can find a lot of use cases for this. Anything from farming to cold chain to another big one, especially in Japan, is disaster monitoring, because there are a lot of, you know, the kind of scary things that happen in Japan. Anything from earthquakes to typhoons to tsunamis, even though we're a little safer from the tsunami part. Also, another big thing that I don't know if like it's as big of a deal where I'm not sure. You're located
in San Diego, California.
It might actually be kind of the same for you, but here, one of the big deals is animals, and it's a really big deal. So we've got boars here, and these boars cause all sorts of trouble. They destroy just tons of crops. They can attack people. Same thing with bears.
It's amazing. Pigs and bears. That's so rad. Okay. I wouldn't have thought there'd be, like, those are pretty big animals. Japan doesn't seem like a big animal place, but sounds like those are both problems for you.
Yeah, these are large animals. People try to do control with these things, but it's really tough. Like electric fences, these boars will just walk through it. They don't, they'll
just take the hit. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they don't care. So creating computer vision devices that also can send data via LoRaWAN, something that you can put out in the woods, put in the middle of sort of nowhere and detect where these things are moving or if they have a trap or something, that was really big for the city.
Oh, rad. And I just saw a super cool device, I think called Mountain Air. It was a tiny little box, had a camera in it, did the processing on board, had a battery for 3 years. And you could just stick it on a tree and basically tell it what to look for. Like, hey, when you see a bear, send me a message. Sounds like you're building the same kind of thing.
Very similar. Exactly.
Then they figure out what to do when they see a bear. They're like, oh, call in airstrikes or however the Japanese ecosystem handles that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, actually, something that's kind of surprising is there's a lot of hunters here. I mean, kind of surprising. People think, you know, Japan, no guns.
Yeah.
No, there are a lot of hunters here. And despite the number of hunters.
Yeah. The hunting pressure doesn't keep the population down. Okay. Interesting. But I can see that being a use case that we wouldn't think of. Like, we don't have a boar or bear problem here in San Diego, but certainly in Texas, I know there's a bunch of wild pig hunting and they're way into that. Okay. That's pretty cool. And then what happened with this, or what was this lightning rod project? I saw a piece on it. The thing was in Japanese, so ChatGPT helped me as much as it could, but I did get the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, so that is something we tested out. We didn't get too far with it.
Okay.
Basically, what we were doing was we were monitoring strikes, the number of strikes that happen, and if there are any like damage. So we had an accelerometer. If the thing was bent, not vertical, we could alert you to that, and then you could go and do repairs. And
got it. So the lightning rod's on the building. It gets hit by lightning. Normally, you wouldn't know about it. You would just know about it if it's, a giant problem.
Right, exactly.
But other than that, it could be damaged. And so you're putting this sensor on there and saying, hey, this thing is now tilted, whatever, 30 degrees. You should go check it.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, the kind of one of the neat things with that is the higher up you are with a lot of these things, the less obstacles you have in your way. So being on top of a building, you're already sort of above all of the obstacles. So it makes it a little easier.
That's great. It's great for coverage, yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we didn't get too far with that right there.
Yeah, and I think that's what I hear a ton in LoRaWAN is that there's all these pilot projects and people are constantly looking for, what's the thing that is going to be, especially as a business, what's the thing that's going to open up the door for you to get into the rest of the building? Because what I hear over and over again is a business will start with, sounds like your thing is cold chain. You'll start with cold chain, like, hey, let me get a LoRaWAN gateway on there or, somewhere on-prem or get you some kind of coverage. Here's this cold chain monitoring. And then once the client sees that, they're like, oh, what else can you monitor? And you're like, well, what are your problems? We can probably solve those. So with that, is there anything else that you're looking to do in the upcoming months or years? What are you guys looking forward to at CropWatch where you're thinking, okay, this is our next big push? What does that look like?
Yeah. So at the moment, what we're looking to do is just expand where our current three things. Right now, we've got temperature sensing is really nice. In Japan, they're now requiring temperature monitoring because the summers here are incredibly hot, incredibly humid. Actually, cities are now required to report when the days become so hot that it becomes a heat stroke risk. And that's actually another major danger here in Japan. So we're hoping that we can set up devices that measure heat index.
Do you think you'll measure, do a whole weather station piece and see where else you can sell that data? Or will you just put up an LHT65, a temperature and humidity monitor and say that's good enough or unknown?
So right now we're working on finishing development of our own hardware. And
oh, cool.
Well, yeah. So that's sort of one of the big things. We had gone back and forth between using our hardware and some pre-made hardware devices. One thing we found was some of the pre-made or made from other companies, they didn't remain alive for as long as we had hoped.
Oh, really? And, okay.
Yeah. So some of the places that we are doing or deploying devices are really, really tough.
Yeah.
So I think our devices are at this point probably the toughest because what we do is we're not just selling our devices to people. We're selling and then we support them.
For the ongoing service. I guess I should ask you about that as the kind of wrap-up piece because this is the business of LoRaWAN. How does the business work? Do you go and find a client and you say, hey, we'll charge you for the hardware and then we'll charge you an ongoing service fee? Is there anything else? That's a pretty standard business model. Is there anything else that you're doing that you think is innovative or useful for other people?
Sure. So one of the, I think, sort of a more difficult thing with LoRaWAN at the moment is right now you need to have an LNS and then you need to have some sort of database to store that data. The Things Network and Actilities, a bunch of them allow you to store data for some amount of time, but a lot of the people we're working with just want to store data, not for some amount of time, but they just want
forever.
Yep. So what we're giving them the ability to do is store their data as long as they have our service.
Nice. And is there anything fancy with that? Are you just running kind of InfluxDB? What does that look like?
It's all Postgres. So yeah, everything's on top of Postgres. Well, so we're using Timescale. That gives us the ability to sort and search through data.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
On top of that, we give people the ability to just in real time connect to our API. That way there, if they don't want data in our database, they can just grab it and push it back into theirs.
And pull it out of the tripping.
And we also give them a user interface, which is nice, but a lot of users want a report. So, something that they print out once a week. We also automatically send that over. All that's pretty standard. The bigger thing is what we're making sure is our devices are really solid and work in sort of tougher places than other devices.
Okay. So just thinking about it as like a ruggedized device company that also offers service.
Exactly. One thing that we have coming up very soon, and it's what we've been sort of hardening the device further against, is we've got a refrigeration unit that is somewhat special. It's for freezing things quickly. And the temperatures quite often drop below negative 40, which is really difficult.
Super cold.
It's super cold. And a lot of LoRaWAN modules have trouble handling temperatures below negative 40. If you go around and look at LoRaWAN modules, it's almost always negative 40 to 85. That's your range. So we've been working on making our device so that it's going to continue to work for extended periods. Some electronics, you hit negative 40, you can drop down below that for a little while and it will be okay. But for extended periods, it can be rough. So
yeah. Okay. So you need something for a flash chiller.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll dig around and help you with that. God knows I talked to enough people in LoRaWAN. Okay. Cool. Ripping, dude. Well, this is super cool to see what's going on with CropWatch. What's the best way for people to find you who are just listening and can't be bothered to read the show notes? Where should they find CropWatch?
Yeah, they can go to our website. It's cropwatch.io.
Okay. Super easy. And I'll make sure that's in the show notes along with anything we talked about. Kevin, thanks so much for making the time. I know you're a founder. I know it's super busy doing all this stuff and starting and running a company. So I really appreciate you making the time to come on.
And thank you very much for having me.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you, the one person in about 100,000 who actually has an interest in how this tiny little slice of the world works. Of course, this isn't just about you and me, it's about everyone in LoRaWAN and how we can work together to make an exceptional thing. LoRaWAN is a dispersed community with little pockets of knowledge all around the world, and most of them don't talk to each other as much as I'd like. So the first and best thing we can do to make this show better is to get more guests on who I don't even know exist. I want to talk to strangers. Strangers who are your friends. Please introduce me to the most rad LoRaWANer you know, or point them my way, or hell, reach out and give me a name. When it comes to running down LoRaWAN guests, I can track a falcon on a cloudy day. If you can remember metsci.show, you can find me. That's metsci.show. metsci.show. Okay, so sharing knowledge by getting great guests on is the first and by far the most important thing we can do to make this better. The next best thing for the show to do is the usual stuff. Subscribe to the show, give it a review, share it in your corner of the world. Again, that's metsci.show. Finally, if you want to support the show financially, you can do that over at support.metsci.show. You'll see options there for one-time donations if you really like this show, as well as an ongoing subscription option if you think this show is worth supporting for the long term. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, sign up for a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 data credits for free. That's enough to run a sensor for about a year if you're firing every hour. The show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.